Right now it is time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk food, glorious food. Welcome back, Arthur. Your fans missed you while you were gone.
Oh, I'm sorry, fans. I needed the morning off.
It's amazing.
My 7-year-old niece wanted to cook me breakfast, and how could I say no?
You can't.
Right?
Yeah.
And the fact is, this is the second time she made scrambled eggs for me, is that she makes scrambled eggs the way her father makes scrambled eggs, and I taught her father how to make scrambled eggs, and I learned from my maternal grandmother. So, and Sydney, the 7-year-old, does it extremely well. Moving on.
Yes.
That's why I couldn't get on the radio with you. I do want to catch everybody up on my stove.
Yes, please.
Because yes. So you're not going to believe this. Finally, on April 28th, after 2.5 weeks, my appointment with the actual Thermidor company repairman came due. This is after another repair service had come twice already and not been able to get it going. This man, Yuri, I should mention his name, he's a nice man, walked into my kitchen, looked at the stove, and said, "Did you clean these knobs?" I said, "No, I haven't touched the knobs because the stove doesn't really work." He said, "Well, these two oven knobs have been reversed." And parentheses, I'm adding, these are the knobs that give the messages to the computer pad inside the stove. So it was getting, I don't know what kind of signals, but it wasn't getting the right signals, and now the stove works perfectly.
So that's all it took.
That's all he had to do, was reverse the two knobs. I mean, they pull right off. That's why he said, "Did you clean them?" Thinking that I put them back the wrong way. But no, the installer put them in the wrong way. And by the way, while he was here, I said, "You know, the kick plate on is a stainless steel kick plate underneath the oven door." I said, "Isn't really on securely?" And he said, and he looked at it, he said, "It's not even on. Nobody ever screwed it in." Moving on.
Well, that's all good news. Congratulations.
It's all good. That part is good. But the painting contractor comes today to look at the paint job, which is not satisfactory. But it's only paint. So I'm not getting stressed out about it. We'll see what happens.
All right.
But meantime, I have lost at least 50 pounds.
Yay.
So and you were 70 the last time we talked about
it. I'm now 79, yep.
Oh, there we go. Was that in 1 month you lost 9 pounds?
No, that took about 6.
Because I'm losing about a pound and a half.
That was about 6 or 7 weeks.
I'm losing about the same rate.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I dipped down, then I ate something because it was Bob's birthday, and actually I was pretty careful, but in fact, you know, I went up a little. And I'm sure today I'll be down a little. So that's what happens. My friend Jeff keeps asking me, not keeps, but he asked me more than once, "Is this diet you're on sustainable?" And I would have to say that it is sustainable. You can go off. You can go off a little. You can go off a lot. As long as you go back to your minimal carbohydrates, it comes off again. Now, Bob, for instance, has a high-carbohydrate breakfast. He has a banana and cereal, which is about 50 carbohydrates, which is about grams of, which is about my limit for the entire day. But anyway, I have learned to eat this way and enjoy it. I miss bread, I think, more than anything. And I'm now considering buying a loaf of bread and keeping it in the freezer, because I'm not going to eat more than one slice maybe every other day of a particular whole grain bread. I have to look to see. I think it's only about 20 carbs, and maybe it's even less. It's probably less net carbs. That means net carbs means the grams of carbohydrate minus the grams of fiber. So there are things that if you look at the label, they seem to be high carb, or higher than you want, but in fact, if you look at the fiber, they are low carb. You deduct the fiber. So just to, I'm going to give you one example of something you don't need to be on the keto diet to appreciate. And that is something I had been looking for the last 8 months and finally found. Something crunchy besides a nut. This is called Keto Crunch. And I bought it in one of my local stores, but I looked, and you can purchase it online. Keto, K-E-T-O, Crunch. And it's a nut-based cereal. It's got almonds, not that many, but enough. Brazil nuts, I counted two in my big bag. Flaxseed, it says. I think that's the crunchy flakes are made out of flaxseed. Pepita nuts, sunflower seeds. So it's all, and it's ever, the one that I bought is called salted caramel, and it's ever so slightly sweetened with artificial sweetener. And I love it. And you can eat it as cereal if you want, but I put it sprinkle. I need crunch on this diet. So that's it. That's my new crunch. Now, my friend Leah Koenig. Now, this is, you remember, you don't have to be keto? It comes from, you don't have to be Jewish. Marshall, do you remember those commercials? I'm sure you do.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
The Levi's Jewish rye bread. And they used to advertise you don't have to be Jewish to appreciate Levi's rye bread.
Yep.
So, Leah has a new newsletter, and she's a very prolific writer about things Jewish and kosher, and as a result, by the way, and she's very contemporary, she's young, she's a young mother, she's got, let's see, Beatrice, I think, just turned 2, and Max is probably 6 by now, a baseball fan, and she has, and a husband, of course, Yossi, is a very accomplished and successful musician. Don't ask me to describe his music, it's unusual. So anyway, but people love it. Anyway, point is, Leah has a new newsletter, and you can find it by going to, just search Leah, L-E-A-H, Koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G, Leah Koenig, and you'll find her website, and on the top it says subscribe to the newsletter. I suggest you subscribe. You don't have to be Jewish to appreciate Leah's very well-tested recipes. I've never made a recipe from Leah that I even wanted to tweak. So I cook from her last cookbook, Jewish Cooking. I cook a number of recipes in there as part of my regular repertoire, including her chicken shawarma, if you're ever into that. Anyway, Leah, in the last issue of Leah's newsletter, she wrote about tuna fish salad. Now, you don't think of tuna fish salad and tuna fish sandwiches as Jewish particularly, so that's why I say you don't have to be Jewish, but in fact, I've never gone to a Jewish home that didn't have tuna fish sandwiches for lunch. And in fact, I once was honored to be a guest at Julia Child's for lunch. I don't remember why I was in Cambridge, but she was still living in Cambridge. And I got to see the kitchen, and I got to sit at her kitchen table and be fed lunch of a tuna fish sandwich. Now, this is a famous thing that Julia made tuna fish for lunch, and there was, in fact, somewhere online, I know, probably more than one place, the story about Julia's tuna fish lunches. But my mother also was a big fan of tuna fish. We didn't get peanut butter and jelly so much as tuna fish with mayonnaise on white bread. So, and in fact, sometimes she would, we ate at home, because my elementary school was right on the corner, and so I was not even allowed to eat in school unless my mother was indisposed for lunch, and she would send me with a sandwich and a note to the teacher that she wasn't going to be home so I could eat in school, and she would send me with these soggy tuna fish sandwiches that I loved. I actually preferred them soggy, don't ask. So Leia's tuna, I was very skeptical of this tuna salad. She says it's the tuna salad that they make at the B&H Dairy restaurant, which is, I don't know if it's the last, but it's certainly among the last of the kosher dairy restaurants, certainly on the Lower East Side. It's probably it's the last. You know, there was Ratner's, there was Rappaport's, there was forgetting the name of the cafeteria that was also a kosher dairy restaurant. When I say dairy, is because according to kosher laws, you have to separate meat and dairy. So they were never served in the same restaurant. If you wanted meat, you went to a delicatessen, and if you wanted dairy, you went to what we called an appetizing store, which sold dairy products as well as fish, pickled and smoked. And then the restaurants were served pierogi, blintzes, the dairy restaurants, vegetarian soups. B&H Dairy, who knew until I read Leah's newsletter, is now owned by a couple who are not Jewish. The man, the husband, is a Muslim from, I think, Egypt. He's Muslim from Egypt, and the wife is a Polish Catholic. I think she's Polish Catholic from New York. And they are running the B&H Deli, honoring all those old dairy restaurant dishes, and still making tuna salad. In fact, what coffee shop in New York, like maybe anywhere, doesn't make a tuna fish sandwich? So I had to make Leah's tuna because I was really skeptical about this recipe, even though I totally trust Leah, so I made it. Now, the first thing I didn't trust is it's made with white albacore tuna packed in water. This is not a product I buy. I buy the light, which is really dark tuna, packed in olive oil, extra virgin if I can get it. So it's interesting because a friend of mine was talking about this the other day. She said, well, I buy the Italian tuna. I said, oh, Genova brand? She said, oh, yeah, Genova brand. I said, you know, it's not Italian anymore. Maybe it was originally, but now if you look at the bottom of the can, you'll find that it either comes from Thailand or Ecuador. I have no preference, but I do note that they come from either Thailand or Ecuador at Genova brand. So I bought white meat albacore tuna, packed in water, drained well. And the dressing for the tuna fish salad is 1/3 cup of mayonnaise. I'm giving you exactly Leah's measurements here. I did tweak this a tiny bit, but she told me I might want to. with a half a teaspoon, 1/3 of a cup of mayonnaise, I use Hellman's. You can use whatever you like. A half a teaspoon, rounded half a teaspoon of yellow mustard, like French's mustard. If you want to use strong mustard, that's up to you, but Leah calls for yellow mustard. A teaspoon of lemon juice, that was what I had to tweak. I'm sure I added at least 2 teaspoons of lemon juice, and a big pinch of salt, and some freshly ground pepper, and then I like to mince very fine. It's one of my meditative things, and it's a tiny, tiny mince that the French call brunoise. If you don't like to do that, use your food processor, even your mini processor. And what you need is about 1/3 of a cup of very finely minced carrot and about 1/3 of a cup of very finely minced celery and about 2 tablespoons of either sliced or minced scallion. Use some green part if you have. And that's it for the dressing. And you mix that with your tuna fish, and I only tossed it so that I ended up with some big flakes of tuna. And I thought the white, you know, the solid white in water packed tuna worked really, really well in this instance. And I not only am I doing it again, but I put it on my list of the tuna. And I don't know, this is serendipity. It was on a seriously discounted sale at my local supermarket. 3 cans for $5. So I'm now well-stocked, and I'm going to make Leah's tuna salad. Oh, so she presents it, by the way, as a tuna melt. And I decided, all right, I'm going to do this, even though this was another thing I was skeptical about. She uses halloumi cheese. Halloumi is sometimes it's an all-goat cheese, sometimes it's an all-sheep cheese. The one I bought is a mixture of sheep and goat. It actually came packaged and cut into thick slices, which is all I really wanted on my tuna. But, you know, I'm going to have to ask Liz. I think, and from the picture, it looks like she cuts her halloumi much thicker because she describes it as this great melter. And to me, it's not a good melter at all. But I did it, and I griddled it the way she said, brushing it with oil and putting it in a hot skillet. But I'm not going to do that again. I like the tuna salad very much. If I had a slice of bread, I would have put it on a slice of bread or two. But I only had tomatoes, so I put tomatoes on the plate, the tuna salad on top, and then the supposedly melty cheese. Next time I'm going to do it in a heat-proof plate, and I'm going to put it with some cheese I do like and under the broiler. So you don't have to be on the keto diet to appreciate this. The only thing in there that's got any significant carb is the carrot. But I think we can all tolerate a third of a cup of high-carb carrot. So, and I covered the keto crunch. And so here's the ultimate. I just happened across this the other day. I haven't thought of making this in literally a half a century. but I used to be, in my 20s, obsessed with eggs sardou. Eggs sardou is perhaps the most complicated American, well, it's actually a Creole recipe, invented at Antoine's in New Orleans and carried on still by Brennan's, which is the place famous for breakfast in New Orleans. And by the way, I was in New Orleans within the last year. And you need to, I can tell you, you need, if when New Orleans is fully open, you need to have reservations for either one of those places well ahead. So not the within the few days before. So egg sardou, I just happened across this on the internet the other day. What I came across was Craig Claiborne's recipe for egg sardou. And it has several elements, all of which are vegetable. Well, not all. Let's start with, this is not original to the Antoine recipe, but you put creamed spinach down on your plate. On top of the creamed spinach goes a cooked, we hope poached in a good flavorful poaching liquid, large artichoke bottoms, just the bottoms. On the artichoke bottom, you put crisscross, a couple of anchovy fillets. On top of that, you put a poached egg. So there normally there are two eggs sardou. Meaning, this is a lot of work. For each one, you got to trim and poach artichoke bottoms and make cream spinach, which by the way is a white sauce, a bechamel, with chopped spinach added. I do that a lot, by the way. That is very keto. And I can even use some cream in my sauce. And by the way, I've decided, speaking of strict keto, you know, you're not supposed to have flour, but there are only 6 grams of carb in a tablespoon of flour. So you can use 2 tablespoons of flour to thicken a bechamel, and if it's enough for 2 people, it's 6 carbs is no big deal. If it's for more than 2 people, which could well be 2 cups of bechamel, it's even less. So, anyway, on top of the spinach creamed, artichoke poached, anchovies, they can come out of a can, eggs poached, you put on hollandaise over the whole thing. And then, if you're at Antoine's in the old days, it came garnished with black truffles. And in the new days, probably more likely, comes with diced sautéed bits of ham, could be crispy, could be not. Of course, they have great ham in New Orleans. So that's egg sardou. Now, the only part of... Well, I do make cream spinach on this diet. You're allowed cream. And I do make hollandaise. So I've been trying to perfect my blender hollandaise, and I think I finally got it right, which is to say, two egg yolks. They don't have to be at room temperature. I'll tell you why in a second. Two egg yolks, the juice of a half of a lemon, a good-sized lemon, so about a tablespoon of lemon juice, two pinches of salt. I have big fingers, so maybe that's an eighth of a teaspoon of salt. And that's it. Put that in your blender, and while you're doing this part, melt one stick of butter. I have a little butter melting pan, so I chunk it up and put it in this pan, and it's sort of melted in no time. Don't let it sizzle. Don't let it burn. Just melt it, and it could be warm. Warm butter is good in this case. And whirl your egg yolks with the lemon juice and salt. Oh, and a little bit of either cayenne pepper or maybe a shot or two of Tabasco sauce, depends on what you like. Could be black pepper. I have a pepper mill that makes like a powder of black pepper, so I don't even have to see the black pepper. And whirl it for about, 30 seconds. But it's going to heat up the egg yolks a little bit, just the friction of the blender with the egg yolks. After 30 seconds, they should be whipped up a little bit, a very little bit, and they will be not ice cold anymore. And into that, and I use the hole at the top of my old blender, handed down to me in 1967, and still working like a dream, my Oster blender, I dribble in my one stick of melted butter. When you get towards the end, you can just more than dribble. You can pour it in a little bit faster. And that's it. And you can taste it and reseason it if you need to. But I find that two pinches of salt, several grinds of my powdery peppermill, a tablespoon of lemon juice are just about right for a lemony hollandaise. Perfect with the asparagus that are coming down in price now because we're coming into the height of the season. So that's another you don't have to be on the keto diet to appreciate. If you haven't ever made hollandaise, don't be scared. It has this reputation of being tricky. But when you do it in the blender, it's not tricky. If you do it by hand, it can be delicate and tricky. Now, here's something else I've been eating a lot. Well, enough, two or three times a week. Raw fish. Now, I don't crave sushi that much. I don't crave the rice so much. And truth be told, you have to pay an awful lot of money at a sushi bar to get really, really good fish. Most of the fish, I would say the majority of the fish, is previously frozen, or not, maybe not even that fresh, and who knows when they defrosted it. Meantime, I go to my fish market, and I get extraordinarily fresh fish, and I look in the case, and if he's got a tiny, tiny piece of tuna, like a half a pound or less is better, or the same of salmon, even the expensive salmon, which can be like $30 a pound. The cheap salmon is like $10 a pound. But I like them both for different reasons. And I buy that, slice it up, dress it with my best olive oil. First salt, then the olive oil, then crushed red pepper, and I have really good hot red peppers. And that's it. And, you know, it would be probably terrific with a piece of crusty bread, but I'm now used to mopping up my salty, peppery oil, which I love on its own, with the fish itself. So I get plenty of oil on the fish. And by the way, when you're on this diet, oil is a good thing, especially olive oil, avocado oil, walnut oil, although I must say walnut oil goes rancid so fast, I don't keep it in the house. I'm managing, and I have not been craving sweets. I have only been craving bread.
That's interesting. I don't crave bread, but I do crave sweets. So my easiest way around it is I get a 12 pack of Dr. Pepper. Okay.
And I allow
myself to sip from that a couple of times a week to give me my sweets.
Well, you know, I do the same, and I have to say I do. I think the perfect beverage with takeout Chinese is a Diet Coke. So lately, you know, I'm so happy to be home and eating my own food. I haven't thought about takeout Chinese in a week. But anyway, I agree. That's a form of sweet. And also, oh, here's one. Werther's. Do you know Werther's?
Oh, yes.
Toffee?
Absolutely.
Well, they make a sugar-free.
Oh, wow.
So if you need a pop of... you can make a Werther's. They come in a plain toffee flavor, and there's also a coffee flavor. So, all right. Well, are you there?
I'm there because I was going to.
I hear beeping in the background, but no, maybe only in my ear.
It's only in your ear, unless. But I was going to say I only.
Oh,
like,
hold on! I got to pick this up.
Okay.
So maybe I have to say goodbye.
All right. Well, we'll say goodbye, and I'll speak to you next week.
All right.
All right. Take care, Arthur.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. Down the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.